Hi, I'm Weird Al Yankovic, and you're listening to the Pantheon Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Bruce Springsteen has released more than 20 studio albums over the course of his 50-year career, including some of the most iconic rock and roll albums in history. We're both huge fans of the Boss here at the Prisoners of Rock and Roll, and we unfortunately didn't get to see him this summer after he canceled part of his tour due to illness. So in this episode, we're taking a close look at what we think are his top five albums. We're going to explain how we came up with this list, talk about the songs that made him such an important figure in music in our lives, and get into what his music means to both of us. Let's go.
You better watch out, you better not cry, you better not bow, I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town, Santa Claus is coming to town, Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list, he's checking it twice, he's gonna find out.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to Prisoners of Rock and Roll, episode number 74. My name is Bruce Kramer, and I'm behind the mic tonight with Santa's little helper, the one and only Ryan McCusker.
Are you rocking?
Prisoners of Rock and Roll is part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, and our show is sponsored by Boldfoot Socks and McCusker's Tavern in Philadelphia. I love you're adding these new little wrinkles to that every week. I love it.
That was my dedication to the Final Kiss show.
Yeah, we'll get to that. I have that in music news.
I have the spirit of Paul Stanley in me.
Awesome, man. So what's going on, dude? How was your Thanksgiving?
It was wonderful, man. You know, I cooked for my family and one got food poisoning. That's a plus, you know.
Awesome.
You know, I'm just ready for Christmas. I love this time of year, man.
Yeah, dude, you've been on Facebook sharing all kinds of Christmas stuff. And even though Santa Claus is Coming to Town by Springsteen isn't in his top five albums, we just on one of those albums, we were like, we're going to open with this because it's this is coming out. It's the beginning of December. It's the last show we'll be doing before our Christmas episode, our fourth annual Christmas episode coming up, which is just crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah, man, I know you've been sharing a lot of Christmas stuff. We're in the full season over here at our house. We put up all the lights and all the other stuff outside, and we're ready to go, man. We're like going to Christmas parties every week for the rest of the year, and a lot going on.
I love setting up my train set. It runs deep in the history of my family, having trains run around. I got Ralphie's house and, you know, little Ralphie figures from A Christmas Story. You know, it's wonderful. There's so much stuff you can add and collect over the years. So
that's really cool.
I got new tradition.
Very cool. Yeah, man, we said we got the lights up. We've been listening to Christmas music. We watched a couple of movies, so it's all good. But yeah, so tonight we're talking about the top five albums of Bruce Springsteen, and I was thinking about it. Like, we did a show on Springsteen quite a while ago, and I looked back at our catalog, and it was in episode 10. And here we are 64 episodes later talking about him again. So I like to think we know a little bit more about podcasting now from between then.
I figured, you know, it's been a while since we even did a Bruce Springsteen topic at all, you know? So, you know, I was listening to some Springsteen this week, and I was like, why don't we do our favorite records by Springsteen?
And this was great for me because I've been listening to so much different types of music, and, you know, we're doing a show. It's like whatever the topic is, that's pretty much what I listen to for the 2 weeks in between. So I'm trying to get into the mood and learn a lot. So as much as I love Springsteen and he's my favorite artist of all time, I haven't spent a whole lot of time listening to him. So doing this show this week was really an opportunity to dive back into some of these albums, man, that I love these. It was really hard for me to come up with the top five.
I was really bummed out when he canceled his show last summer. I haven't listened to him at all. And I was just like, it's time. I'm not mad anymore. I'm not. Yeah. You know, I'm saving on the ticket for next summer. But like you said, he has all these albums. But, you know, I think, you know, our favorites and even like his whole thing of he's the prisoner of rock and roll gave us our whole inspiration to have a show.
Absolutely, man. Yeah, and you're right. I was getting ready to walk out the door to head down to McCusker's the day that for one of his shows, and you called me and were like, dude, it just got canceled. He's sick and total bummer. Yeah, you know, we've said before, you need a little bit of that in your life.
You know, no, but like you go to his shows and you see grown men crying. You know, it's like he has so much meaning to so many people. You know, his words are like gospel, man.
Yeah, it's like going to church and school and a concert all at the same time. And it just there's nothing like it. If you've never seen him live, we say this all the time on the show, man. Go take advantage of the opportunities because, you know, he's 74 years old, man. He's getting older and you never know, you might miss that chance.
He's still good live too. You know, some of these guys still don't have it, but Springsteen still has it, man.
Yeah, I had some friends of mine saw him last year, like the beginning of the tour, and said he was still, you know, still sounded good and all this other kind of stuff. So really nothing like it. But I was surprised because figuring out the top five albums was we had four of the we agreed upon, and there was one more that we bounced around and we went back and forth a little bit on. But I'll read the five and then maybe we'll just start going through them. But we decided, and this is in no order, was Born to Run, Born in USA, The Rising, Darkness on the Edge of Town, and The Wild, the Innocent, and The E Street Shuffle. And I guess that The Wild and the Innocent was one of mine, and you had The River. We kind of went back and forth, and we ultimately settled on The Wild and the Innocent. I just, I don't know, man, we could start there. That was his second album, 1973. He wasn't famous yet. He wasn't huge. His albums were getting critical acclaim, but he didn't have that enormous... Yeah. Superstardom that he got with like Born to Run.
You could see it, or I'm sorry, you could hear it in his music and his words. He's still maturing into from a young guy into a man, you know.
Yeah, some of the lyrics, there's a little bit of like street poetry in this. He's telling he paints a lot of pictures with his words and the stuff that he's talking about.
I think that's the great thing about Springsteen is that he paints a thing in your head about, you know, his songs are stories mostly.
Yeah. And I was thinking about that this week too, that I think I really enjoy music that tells stories. I think it's why I've been listening to so much like outlaw country music. There's a lot of storytelling in that. And I like Springsteen so much, Mellencamp, you know, guys that I just enjoy that storytelling aspect. Johnny Cash.
Sure. He's like, and Springsteen's like master of his craft.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's always like I respected Dylan. I'm not a big fan of his voice, but you know, I totally understand. He's like also one of the masters of it. But the Springsteen album, too, it has so many little elements of things that made him famous. Like there's some quirkiness. It's like there's a couple like party-ish kind of songs on there. Some of the masterful storytelling, the really long songs that he's famous for. There's just a lot of like the blueprint of what made him successful is here on this album.
Which song sticks out?
Oh my gosh, man. There's so many. Well, there's only seven songs on this album, But there are the opening for like New York City Serenade, even before he sings, there's just like that's something that like when I listen to, I put it on and I just close my eyes and I listen to it. And I was like, man, this is just it's just perfection to me.
Let's hear it.
Yeah.
Sitting in the back seat of his Cadillac, diamond jacket, she's so intact. Yeah, she falls so softly beneath him.
The song's 10 minutes long. I was like, holy shit. I didn't realize that's the longest song on that album. I could listen to that whole thing.
Yeah, sure. That's why there's only a few songs on this record. It had to fit on one side of vinyl, you know. You know, besides words with Springsteen, his musical abilities that have passion, you can't teach that. You know, it's something you're born with. And just without even saying anything, he's just painting a picture.
Yeah, the piano in that, it just feels like New York City to me.
Yeah, was that Danny Floderice?
Yeah, it was either him or the professor, Roy Bittan, playing on it. Springsteen, actually, he writes a lot of his songs on piano, too. Like, he's nowhere near as good as the guys in the band, but he dabbles in it, though.
No, I'm sure that comes a big part of songwriting is, you know, having the ability to write songs on the piano.
It's just a beautiful song, and it tells a story. And
I love how he describes automobiles. You know, like he says, like getting a Cadillac, and you know, just how he just has this way about him.
Yeah, he's something he did. I think it was like his VH1 Storytellers. He was like, you know, in the 60s and the 70s, the 70s, I was making albums about girls and cars. And then I took the girls out of cars, and then I stopped writing about the cars. And he was kind of making fun of, like, you know, in the 90s when his career wasn't really that, you know, he wasn't making a ton of albums. And
yeah,
he kind of, you know, he moved to LA and got rid of the E Street Band and all that other stuff.
The biggest song on there is Rosalita.
Yeah, dude. But, and that's a great, you know, he still plays it all the time. It's an enormous, it's just a party song. Again, it tells a story. If you listen to the album straight through, it's like it comes right after Incident on 57th Street and it goes right into it. So it's like Incident's got this kind of, it kind of winds down and it jumps right into Rosalita. And it's just a great tune.
I mean, we always hear Rosalita. Let's hear a little bit of Incident on 57th Street.
Yeah, dude, that's the other one. Incident and New York City Serenade are both just awesome songs, but I'll play a little bit of Incident on 57th Street and we find some good parts in it. It tells a story. Like in 7 minutes, he tells a story.
I could see why he would get pissed off when everybody say he was the next Dylan, but like, whoa, man, there was so many like phrases there that has Dylan like written all over it. Even just how he sings parts of it.
I agree. And this album, I can see why it didn't have commercial success, because the music in it is like, it's a little quirky. It's not like a straight up like rock and roll record, right? There's like some, there's just some interesting stuff going on in here.
There's definitely the Jersey sound, the Jersey Shore sound going on. You know,
I agree.
That late 60s, early 70s Jersey sound.
And he's got a huge band, right? So he's a sax player and an organ player and a piano player. Like, there's a lot of instruments. And his music was always like that. He had a ton of just different stuff, whether he's playing the mandolin or there's a glockenspiel and all this other shit going on.
Yeah. I love the glockenspiel.
Yeah. You hear a lot of that this time of year, too, with the holidays. But, yeah, dude, and like 4th of July, Asbury Park is like that. It tells a story, man. And it's like, I mean, growing up.
I love that song.
Let's play a little bit of it.
On Broadway, on the boardwalk, way past dark. And the boys from the casino dance with their shirts open like Latin lovers on the shore. Chasing all them silly New York virgins by the score.
That's a song, like, I can see that song.
Sure. He is at this point of his career. He's so young, and you can hear like the hope in his voice, and like the, when you're that young, you have this romance in your head that, you know, with life, and he's so hungry, and like, it's powerful.
It really is. And growing up so close to Asbury Park and going there a lot, like, you know, some of the places he references in this song and shit, and a lot of his songs, they're like, they're still there, right? Like, he talks about Highway 9 in like a ton of different songs, and Highway 9 runs through his hometown of Freehold and down the shore. And yeah, like the place he mentions, Madame Marie, the fortune teller, like that place is still there. You could still go there in Asbury Park. You know, maybe one other song on this album we could talk about too was like the E Street Shuffle, which is just a fun, like a party song. And you hear a lot of this starts coming out like in The River. And I think the River gets a lot of attention from fans because it does have some really cool party songs on it, in addition to some,
yeah,
the storytelling and stuff like that. But the E Street Shuffle's just got it's funky. It's like jazzy. Really unlike a lot of other rock music that was out at the time.
It's a great opener. It opens.
Yeah,
it
really
album.
Is. Awesome. Yeah, that's a great point. And that's a good segue too, is like, I think you talked about this in the episode we did on him before, that he was really keen on songs that would open and close the sides of the vinyl, right? Like he called it like the four corners. So like the beginning and end of each side of a record, he tried to make that like uplifting.
Yeah. He's a master of like setting up his songs and like how they present them.
Something is probably lost with music going digital and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just.
Nobody sits down and listens to an album anymore.
Right. And I guess back with vinyl, when that was the only way you could listen to music, like you listened to the album in the order in which they told you were going to listen to it, right? You're not just like, oh, I don't like this song, I'm just gonna hit forward on Spotify or just jump around to the tracks I want to hear.
God, I listened to so much vinyl just so I could sit, relax, and listen to an album. I don't want to like listen to a playlist that Spotify came up with my favorite listenings, you know. I want to listen to what I've been listening to. God, I just got a bunch of records and I've been entertaining myself for the last week or so.
The experience of listening to an album is just something that I think is largely lost. And something I was reading on Facebook, they were like, you know, even if it's CDs, they're like, you own it, you can listen to it whenever you want to, you can read the liner notes, the artwork, like that whole experience is just largely, it's gone now. Like, even I think Best Buy said they're getting rid of their CD departments. I was like, shit, they even still have a CD department in Best Buy. But
yeah, I'm sure their CD and movie sections are very, very small because everything is digital now.
Yep. But I mean, I had some stupid like 1200 CDs or something when my wife and I moved in together. I sold them all because I'm like, I just don't have the space for them.
Yeah, I threw all my shit out. I didn't take care of my CDs at all. So yeah. Throwing them out wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, I sold all mine to a used record store, but you know, I had all my shit was alphabetized, and I, you know, before I sold them all, I did put a lot of them on my computer. But even that, like iTunes, like I don't go into my iTunes anymore and listen to stuff.
No, I'm just Spotify, you know, getting the point A to point B mostly. Yep. But like I sit home and listen to a lot of just records so I can relax and listen to a full album.
Yeah, well, you're having a different music listening experience that most people don't have. I mean, shit, there's songs I like and I go to listen to on Spotify and they're not there anymore, right?
It's a drag.
Sometimes it comes and goes, like something's there and a couple months later it's not, because there's different, you know, artists are pulling things or whatever. And it's just, yeah, it's, even we were talking an episode before about when the warden sent Edie Brickell to the electric chair, and I was like, oh, Henry Rollins did this whole bit. And I couldn't find it. Like Henry Rollins' old spoken word stuff's not on any of the streaming platforms. I'm like, I used to have all those albums. I don't have them anymore. So
yeah,
I couldn't find it.
Well, he's in control of all that. He don't want it out there. So, you know, it's Henry.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was like, you know, had I not sold all my or gotten rid of my albums, I would have still had it. So yeah, it's great that you still listen to vinyl that much.
But, I love it. I love the sound of it. I have a great sound system hooked up to it. You know, there's nothing like it, man.
It's awesome. Gator, let's play a little bit of the E Street Shuffle, and then we can move on to the next album. Here you go.
Rad.
That song just hits you right out of the gate with all the instruments. There's so much going on right there.
It's not so much like a rock and roll song more than it's an R&B song.
I agree.
There's such a bottom to it. The bass, and then Clarence is playing really deep. That's a great opener. Great opener. You know, back then in the 70s, it was safe to like be like a different kind of, be a white guy and be an R&B song come out, you know?
And he is always, like, soul music has always been a huge part of his music repertoire and covers he does and shit like that. Yeah, it is so, it's just very different sounding, super cool, and it really gets, like, rocking later, like, bah, 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 bah. Yeah, just, it really takes off.
Yeah. Great opener.
I totally understand, in retrospect, of why it wasn't getting a ton of airplay, and it wasn't like a commercial success, because there's no song, like the only song on here that's under 5 minutes long is Wild Billy's Circus Story, and that's just that's a really weird song. It's got like a tuba in it and it's really slow.
It's a different kind of album. He is before he got older and mature.
Yes, I totally agree. But I think the album that he came out with next after that was one, yeah, that's where he takes off and becomes a star. Not the Born in the USA level of star, but in the album Born to Run.
Oh yeah. That's when like he was like on the cover of Time magazine and Newsweek, and it was amazing. It was before my time. I obviously can't remember that run, but man, what a great live shows there are captured from that era of Springsteen.
He was always famous for putting on these amazing shows, and they still they play a lot of the stuff on the radio, or it's on Spotify, like recordings of him from this era. To me, Born to Run is one of those. It's a perfect album, front to back, every song. I there's not a song on there I don't like. It's just it's one of my favorite albums in all of music.
You have a favorite song from that album?
Oh my god, shit, dude! It would depend on my mood. What about you,
dude? I love Jungle Land. Let's play a little bit of it. The kids around here look just like shadows. Always quiet, holding hands. From the churches to the jails, tonight
the world as we take our stand down in jungle.
That song is just rock and roll poetry.
Dude, only one guy can can say, from the churches to the jails. That is awesome.
I love the line, like, the poets down here don't write nothing at all. They just stand back and let it all be.
Which later on in the song, I'm standing underneath that giant Exxon sign.
Yep, it brings up the whole Fair City Light. There's an opera on the turnpike. There's a ballet being fought in the alley. The local cops, the cherry tops.
Kids switch guitars just like switchblades.
Right. It's like the West Side Story kind of vibe to it. Like there's going to be a fight going on. It's just it's beautiful. And the sax solo it's the best saxophone solo in the history of rock and roll. I remember the day you told me that Clarence Clemons died because I was in my birthday party. At your birthday party and you got over the PA system.
That sucked. Said that
the party was good.
Every birthday I remember, Clarence died on my birthday.
Then I came home at night and I listened to that sax solo at Jungleland like 10 times in a row. Just put some headphones on, sat in a dark room and just listened to it over and over and over again. And you watch the documentary on the making of Born to Run. And Clarence said, like, people used to come up to him and be like, man, that sax solo saved my life. Mm. It's just it's amazing.
You know, other song I love on this album is Backstreets.
Backstreets is a great song, dude. We can play a little bit of that. It's also got great storytelling, and it's got one of the best like Springsteen yells at the end of it too. Love it, man. There's a line in there I hated him and I hated you when you went away. And you're just like, man, it is just powerful stuff.
I love that he lets the band ring out to, you know, he gives the E Street Band total room to breathe. It's awesome.
Again, it's a song. It's 6.5 minutes long. His whole career, he had these really long songs. And, you know, shit, when you see some of these live, they're even longer. They're like 12 minutes long.
I don't mind it. I don't mind it at all. You rocking it. Keep it going.
I absolutely agree, man. Just looking down the hole, like, She's the One. I love the beat. And she's the One. Born to Run is
10th Avenue.
10th Avenue is such a cool song. I mean, shit, one of my cats is named Scooter after Bad Scooter from 10th Avenue Freeze Out. He's even like, I don't know what the fuck a 10th Avenue Freeze Out is.
That is hysterical on that Broadway thing he did. And he was like, I don't know. I make it all up. I don't know anything about cars. I have no idea.
There is an ice cream shop in Belmar, New Jersey, down the shore called the 10th Avenue Freeze Out. I'm like, that is brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yeah, Belmar is like right near Asbury Park where he grew up. But yeah, dude, we could play a little bit of 10th Avenue, maybe like especially the part where tells a story of Clarence joining the band. Yeah. He always says when he plays this live, this is the important part. And we get to that.
Well, the change was made up town in the big man.
Dude, Clarence spits fire out of that saxophone, man.
the relationship that the two of them had, it's just a special part of the music too. Like they were close friends.
The album cover at the time, the '70s, you know, there's was still a lot of black and white against each other thing. And here Springsteen puts the darkest man he could find on the cover with him, you know?
Right.
He was showing the world.
Sure. Right. So, you look at the vinyl, Springsteen, like you can see like half of Clarence. Springsteen's leaning on him, and you would open it up, and Clarence was on the back side of it. Yeah, dude. And he would dance on stage with Clarence and like kiss him on the lips. You know, like they'd be dancing together. They were brothers.
You read Springsteen's book and you see how far their relationship really went.
It was very different. I mean, other guys in the band have passed away or quit and moved on. But when Clarence passed away, it's just different. It is. Jay Clemens, his nephew, plays in the band. He's good.
He's
not Clarence. He's not.
No, he never will.
Clarence is a figure on the stage.
But, you know, the kid goes out there and he's hungry and it sounds it.
Yeah.
You know, not that Clarence, you know, you just play the same solo a million times, whatever. Now this kid comes out and it's, you know, he's hungry and he's just trying to make his spot. He's not trying to take Clarence's spot at all. He's just taking it to the next level so the music can continue.
Yeah. Other songs on the album, I mean, Born to Run is one of the perfect rock and roll songs, and it's amazing to hear him talk about that because he's like, I sat down trying to write one of the greatest songs in the history of rock and roll, and he did.
Sure.
I mean, shit, it just, you know, again, another song, I Can See, you can go to Asbury Park. A lot of those places are still there. He talks about
the version of that song on the Born to Run on that box set, that live box set. He kills it. That was like my first introduction to Born to Run. I never heard it until that version.
Interesting.
And wow, what a, you know, they had a video for it back in when we were kids. It was on MTV all the time.
Yeah.
And it was a live version. He's running around the stage and like you said, he kisses Clarence in the video and it was like, wow, this guy is a performer.
Thunder Road, too, was another song like I Can Hear. And you said like being exposed to it there. The VH1 Storytellers, he sits at a piano and he was playing it and he was talking about it as he was playing it. It's super cool. I mean, I don't think he plays it the whole way through. He plays a couple minutes and he stops and he talks about it. But he was like, you know, this song was my invitation to the album. And it was like the opening, much like we said, like the beginning in the end of the four corners of his albums, he wanted were like special to him. They had like special places in what the songs were.
Wow. I never heard that.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's really
it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, as me, you know, I love that. I'm gonna try to notice it a little bit more on his records.
I don't know how far he got with it, because again, I mean, he's probably not doing it now, just given the way albums.
No, well, you know, music's printed out differently now. So, you know.
But definitely the first couple albums had that element to it. It's just very interesting.
I love to hear him as a young guy.
You
know,
yeah.
That, being young and have a romance in your head. That's, you know. He captures being young in the summer, you know?
Absolutely. And the themes that he sings about and the way his voice sounds and everything, it has absolutely evolved over the 50 years, you know, that he's been making music. And, you know, we'll get into like the rising a little bit later, but just how different that sounds and how different is put together than some of this early stuff. I mean, shit, even Born to Run sounds very different than the Wild, the Innocent, and the E Street Shuffle.
You know, he had success, and with success, you get better producers. And, you know, Jimmy Iovine did a lot of shit on Born to Run.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That we magic still have ear.
We still have to do an episode on Jimmy Iovine or any of those music producers. It would just be, yeah, that's some music nerd stuff, but that would be an interesting story to get into.
He's an interesting guy.
Yeah. I keep meaning to watch that documentary with him and Dr. Dre.
It's great.
Yeah, I started it and I didn't finish. I forget why I stopped and I just never circled back to it.
I never knew anything about him until I watched that documentary. I was like, whoa, this guy's a monster.
Yeah, crazy. He made like more money from his headphones than he did all the records he produced and just how many albums he did.
He deserves all the success that he gets. All those all that music he made and probably got nothing from it.
Yeah, it's amazing how there's like a small group of music producers, you know, maybe like, I don't know, you could probably pick 10 of them. It'd be like how many, you know, Phil Spector, Jimmy Iovine, Clive Davis, Ahmet Erdogan, you know, whatever. And just like how many, like, you know, enormous number of records that they put together. Barry Gordy, just, and you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. All right, man. So the third album we both had on the same list, and that was the follow-up to Born to Run. And that's Darkness on the Edge of Town.
That is my favorite record. If I
could is your favorite
Springsteen
album?
If I could have a number one album, that would be it.
Really? Why would that be your number one?
I don't know, man. It just speaks to me differently than other records do, you know?
Okay.
Just, yeah. You know, now that you say the four corners, I'm thinking about, because I do listen to it on vinyl a lot. It's like a security blanket for me, Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Okay.
You know, and he still has that young mentality in his head, and he's still hoping for the future in his songs.
Yeah. He said Darkness was his samurai album. It's all stripped down and ready to fight. And I read a review in Medium that said, this is Springsteen's first adult statement. In Born to Run, he's crooning about drinking warm beer in a soft summer rain. In Darkness, that rain is falling on the head of a silent man trudging through factory gates on his way to a job that allows him to make a living at the expense of his own life. And I was like, I love that. It is it is darker.
It is a dark song. It's at that time, it was a dark time in American history. There's no jobs. You know, there was the gas situation.
Yeah, this is kind of where he starts singing. He becomes like the more like the blue collar, right? His reputation of being for like the working man. This is really where that starts to come out.
Play Factory, man.
All right.
Takes his lunch, walks out in the morning light. The working, just the working light. Through the mansions of fear, through the mansions.
Great song.
Yeah. I was never super into that. And then one of the billion times I've seen him was when he was on tour and he was playing a different album front to back at each date.
Yeah.
And he played
sure.
this album front to back. And I had the Spectrum, right?
The Spectrum. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had a totally different appreciation for it.
I don't know if you saw him, but he played that year in Philadelphia on Labor Day. And he came out and he opened with this song.
Yes, Citizens Bank Park.
I was like, holy shit, I can't believe he's opening with this.
He walked out and was like, my people, because he just loves playing Philadelphia. And yes, that show was one of the best concerts I've ever been to. I think I was with the Warden.
I was with my father. Yeah, you know what the song I love is Streets of Fire.
Streets of Fire is also great. This is an album. There's a couple songs on here where the Professor Roy Bittan's piano playing is just, he just crushes it. And Streets of Fire has got some of that in it too.
Play a little bit of it.
The loser down the track and I'm alive.
this is a dark album. And yeah. Songs like that are just, they're plotting. The way he sings, like the pace at which he's singing is just, he's come so far from like the E Street Shuffle at this point.
It's a different kind of, he's a different kind of man. I think Born to Run really like showed him how much he was getting ripped off in the music industry. You know, he start doing the math and all that shit. And I think it made him even more so like write a little bit more honesty.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, this is right around when his relationship with his first manager, Mike Appel, ended. He started working with Landau, or it was like right around like something. His relationship with his first manager did not end well, and it was like lawsuits, and they were suing each other and all kinds of other shit. And he, I believe this was part of that, if I remember correctly. Because you go back to listen to episode 10 that we did, and it's in there. But
now I think my favorite song on Darkness is Racing in the Streets.
I think Racing in the Street is where the hardcore Springsteen nerds, like, I think that's the line. There's like the casual, everybody knows Born in the USA and Born to Run and all the hits. To me, Racing in the Street is like the perfect album or the perfect song that was never a huge hit. And I love, this is like the nerdness, but the version off of The Promise, which was like the box set for Darkness Under the Town.
Sure.
There's a different version of it, which is, I think that's one of my favorite Springsteen songs. But I'm with you, dude. Racing in the Street is a great song.
I love the line. And I always think of us because we're partners in crime. When he's like, we only run for the money. No strings attached. We shut them up and we shut them down. That's me and you, man.
We shut them up and then we shut them down. Tonight, tonight, the strip's just right. I wanna blow them off in my first heat. Summer's here and the time is right for racing in the street. We take off.
There are so many great friggin' lines in that.
I know.
That song. Like, I love the, is it some guys, they give up living, start dying little by little, piece by piece. Some guys come home from work and they wash up and go racing in the street. It's just, it's poetry. It's just, it's rock and roll poetry.
Oh, I so agree, man.
And it's kind of a sad song, right? Because he wins the girl from a race and then she's kind of sad at the end and they want to drive off and...
It's like a movie.
Yeah, right.
And it's a little, like an old, like, you know, not to say Thunder Road, but, you know, like one of those movies like Thunder Road or racing movies.
And he took a lot of inspiration from that. Obviously, Thunder Road was inspired from a movie, Thunder Road. And, he was always into kind of old films and stuff like that. He also... is a pretty goddamn good guitar player, and that gets overshadowed by all the musicians that he has.
Oh, yeah.
And he, you know, if you ever see him live and they play Adam Raise the Cane, he brings it and he goes crazy. I'll play a little bit of that. The beginning of it is just like, you sit down and you just get hammered over the head with this. You made such a great point earlier when you said that Springsteen gives everybody the room to kind of do their thing and flourish. Because just listen to that. Like, you, like, try to listen beyond the lyrics and listen to everything that's going on. There's like, you know, there's these little flourishes on the piano that are popping up, and it's really cool.
I love how Springsteen plays guitar. You know, I famously said, you know,
yes,
Springsteen drags his notes. He don't, you know, he like pulls and drags them, man. He doesn't play them. He doesn't bend them. The motherfucker, you know, he just down and dirty and just beats it up almost.
He's absolutely overlooked as a guitar player.
It's all passion. All his playing. It's not about, you know, being Steve Vai with him or being Joe Satriani or any of that shit. It's about being like playing that one note and being, you know, it's expressive with it.
And that's a big part of seeing him live is just the emotion that he conveys, right? Whenever he's, that's coming out of him when he's playing the guitar, he's performing live. Just
passion. You know,
he's, right. He's just pouring himself out for 3.5 hours, 3 hours, whatever, 4 hours sometimes. Just awesome.
Dude, I'll take passion over talent any day.
Yeah, I agree, particularly with his music.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, man, maybe the other song worth playing on here is Badlands. And to me, that's like seeing Badlands live is, if I had to take somebody to see Springsteen live and hear like one song to kind of like get it, what it's like to see him live, it would be that. Like the top, you know, there's the break and the whole crowd's going like, whoa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he's just standing there and he's holding the guitar up and it's just, that has one of my favorite lines in rock and roll. It's just, it ain't no sin to be glad you're alive.
Yeah. I love, like, this is an opener for the album.
Right.
And it's a drum intro. I love the drum intro to it, and it's just powerful.
There's hope in that song. It's kind of uplifting. You know, I believe in the love that can save me. Yeah, it's just, it's one of my favorite rock and roll songs. Here, we'll play it from the beginning because it does have that opening, the drum. I love too, like when the guitar comes in, it's like it's going up and down the neck real quick before he starts playing.
Vivoom.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. I don't know. It's bold. It's like he's standing up, defiant. It's just, I love it.
He made a comment once. He said when he sings the chorus Badlands, he was trying to sound like Roy Orbison.
Interesting.
Yeah, like Badlands.
Yeah.
Just like Roy Orbison would, like, you know, sing like real high.
Yeah, thing. Interesting. I know he was a big Roy Orbison fan. So,
who isn't?
That's true, right? I'm a big Roy Orbison fan, but there's that, there's some, whatever, some tribute show to Roy Orbison.
Oh, yeah.
And Springsteen was playing guitar in the background.
Yep.
So,
yep.
We need to talk about Roy Orbison more, man. He's one of the best. So,
dude, I say we take a little break.
Yeah, dude, that sounds like a great spot. We're going to take a little break. We'll come back. We got two more albums to talk about, and then we got a bunch of music news, and we got all kinds of other good stuff.
All right, yo, stick around.
We'll be back. Prisoners of Rock and Roll is sponsored by McCusker's Tavern at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia. There's something for everyone on the beer list and the jukebox at McCusker's. It's minutes from the sports stadiums in Philly, making it a great place to stop by for a few drinks before or after a concert or a game. Come see for yourself why everyone from Philadelphia Magazine to Playboy has called it one of the best dive bars in the city. Visit them at 17th and Shunk Streets in Philadelphia or on Facebook. That's McCusker's Tavern.
Hello, Pantheon Podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, Or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
So now that the holidays are in full swing, I'm sure everybody's looking for some last-minute gifts or some stocking stuffers. Be a great chance to go check out Boldfoot Socks. Prisoners of Rock and Roll is proud to be sponsored by Boldfoot Socks because they're a family-owned American business that just makes great socks in a variety of styles. And every pair is made in America for materials grown in America. On top of that, they're a vet-owned business. And they donate 5% of their proceeds to veteran charities. And when you're done listening to us, you can just head on over to boldfoot.com and check them out and tell them that Ryan and Bruce and the Prisoners of Rock and Roll sent you. It's boldfoot.com. Speaking of that, man, you know, Josh is a friend of ours, the owner of Boldfoot Socks, and he is one of those crazy, like, ultra runners. And I saw on their Facebook page that he just finished something. He said, once again, the Boldfoot Socks helped us during our 6-hour race in Franklin, Tennessee. He did a race called the Tennessee Mile, where you run up and down a hill called the Murder Mile.
Oh, God.
And it's how many times can you run it in 6 hours straight?
Oh, yeah, that's right? Insane. Josh, right? Are you insane, brother?
No, I know he does all kinds of, like, you know, 50-mile runs, hard-to-mile runs, and all this other kind of stuff. So, crazy.
I don't have that much energy, but God bless that dude.
Right. I assume he's still standing after doing it, but he was, they were posting some pictures on Facebook talking about, you know, the training that they were doing and everything else. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Props.
Good stuff, man. He's a good dude, and he's a big fan of ours, and he's a really big music guy. So
keep on rocking, brother.
Yeah, man. All right, we're back from the commercial break. Thanks so much for sticking with us. That was obviously Glory Days off of the enormous friggin' album Born in the USA.
God, it was so big, that album. I think it's one of the 4 records that I remember as a really young child that, like, introduced me to music.
I feel the same way. My dad had it on cassette tape and used to play it all the time. And in the car growing up, and
we had it on vinyl.
Okay. Oh,
and,
wow.
And yeah. And it was on my little record player all the time. You know?
Very cool. Yeah. I remember, my dad just playing that all the time. I knew every one of those songs off of the album. And, I was a casual Springsteen guy. And then when he got the band back together, I got tickets from my dad for, like, Father's Day to take him to a show, and seeing him live, that just blew. I was like, holy shit. What am I looking at?
Yeah. And I was at that show. I was at one of those shows anyway.
Yeah. That was just what hooked me. And then,
you know, you grow up with songs and they change meaning to you, you know, like, I love the song My Hometown. I always did. But, you know, he's telling a story that, you know, now he has his kid on his lap saying, this used to be this, and this used to be this. And now I've grown up, and I'm looking around, and this used to be that, and this used to be that, and this used to be that. You know, it's really strange. Like, you grow up, and then you see these songs have more meaning to you, you know. Let's play Hometown.
Steer as we drove through town, tassel my hair, say something, good look around, this is your hometown, this is your hometown, this is your hometown, this is your hometown.
Yeah, I could definitely, I think I wasn't smart enough to understand what that song was about when it was, you know, when I was a kid.
And also, it's like I've seen a lot in my life, a lot of stores closing up because they can't afford to be open anymore. You know, and he says, it seems like nobody wants to come down here no more. You know, I've seen that in my life.
Sure. Right. Shit. I mean, the music stores that we worked in.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You know, that they're gone. That whole experience of going to a music store and just browsing around it, that's not like a very common thing anymore. Like, malls don't have, it's just not a thing that you do anymore.
I dream about going to record stores, man. I swear to God I do. And like, just picking record. I wish I could start all over again and have record stores and just be able to start collecting like vinyl again for first time.
Sure, because there was things you picked up just because you liked the band's name or the artwork, and you would sit there and you would study it, and you'd go through the liner notes and read all the shit about it, and you know, some, you would hope the lyrics were in the liner notes for the in the CD so you could read along.
Now, like the cover of Born in the USA, I think is brilliant. I mean, it's the blue collar American flag. It's the white shirt, the blue jeans, and the red hat.
Yeah, Andy Leibowitz photo of him. And that's what, you know, the icon of him with the headband and the sleeveless t-shirt, and right, he started lifting weights and all this other kind of stuff. But this album, it was like, I feel like every song on this was a single. It was like, I feel like I knew every one of these songs from the radio, not necessarily from listening to the album. And maybe that was because my dad played it so much when I was growing up. But
there's great working on the highways fun. You know,
it is. It's a little weird. Like,
that's why I like it.
The guy might be getting arrested for statutory rape in it, because he says, like, don't you know she's just a little girl? She don't know nothing about the cruel, cruel world. And then he winds up in jail. But it's it's got a rocking beat to it. And it's, you know, I work for the county out of 95, and I hold a red flag and just watch the traffic pass me by. And it's like, all he wants to do is just go out and have a beer on a Friday night. But
you know, this is the album when Springsteen started making like videos for MTV. Like, he was like playing little actor roles in his videos, which one of my favorite videos that he ever made is for the little song I'm on Fire.
Yeah, when he's the mechanic.
And she's like, drop this hot girl, drop his car off.
Yep. Yeah, we could play a little bit of that. Yeah, sure.
Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Did he go and leave you all alone? I got a bad desire. Oh, I'm on fire. Tell me now, baby, is it good to you? And can he do to you the things that I do? Oh, no. I can take you high.
I've seen him play that. I mean, that's all these songs on this album have a sheen of 80-ness on them, right? Just the way they're produced.
Oh, sure. The organ in the background.
Yeah, a lot of synth. And
yeah.
But sometimes I've seen him play this live, and he'll, like, one time he just pulled a chair up on the stage and he just sat down and he just singed it. And it was so just like raw and emotional. It was so different sounding. Which is one of the things I love about his music, is that he will reinvent songs and come up with different versions of things.
Oh, sure.
It was just a totally different experience listening to it than this version, which is also a song that I didn't understand what it was about when I was a kid. I'm like, why is he singing "Is Your Daddy Home"?
Yeah, you know, you grow up and you look at these songs, you're like, oh.
Right. I was some naive 12-year-old not knowing what the hell was going on. But
I love the song No Surrender.
Yeah, I do too. And you probably feel the same way. I mean, the line in there, I've learned more from a 3-minute record than we ever learned in school. And just,
dude,
that's a great line.
So true.
Absolutely.
So true.
Yeah. I love the defiance of No Surrender. That it reminds me of my wife a lot, just her attitude and love towards it. Things in life, and just I whenever I hear that song, it makes me think of her. We can play a little.
I love that woman.
Yeah, I do too. Yeah,
absolutely. Play a little bit of it.
There's a defiance in that song. It's just, I don't know. Again, it's just like a boldness, much like in Badlands. Like he's standing up, and I love the line, "I'm ready to grow young again," is it's great. And these, even as this is playing, I'm just looking down the list of Spotify. These songs are all like 4.5 minutes, right? So this album is built to be played on the radio.
Yeah, I totally, I was so in the mind of being mainstream. The album was done. They're like, "No, you need one more fucking song." And he's like, "What are you talking about? I need one more song." He's like, "Go home and write a hit." And you know what it was? It was Dancing in the Dark.
Dancing in the Dark, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they said, who was it? Landau? Say, "You don't have a hit. You have a couple hits, but you need a super hit."
Yeah.
He's like, "All right, motherfucker, I'm going to go home." But you listen to the words, it's like, no big deal. Like, there's nothing like, I'm standing here looking in the mirror, just trying to read, it's about him writing a song.
Right. There's a joke in here somewhere, and it's on me. Sitting around getting older. There's a joke here somewhere, and it's on me. Yeah, it's crazy that that's like the throwaway. Like, okay, here, you want something? I'll just bang this out and we'll throw it on. And it became this enormous thing, which he's still like, it's like one of the last songs he plays every time he's in concert and the place goes crazy. And
yeah,
he pulls somebody up to go to dance with somebody in, if it's either him or, somebody will have a sign, "Can I dance with your guitar tech?" or some shit like that. And he pulls them up on stage and they dance with him. So,
it's a shame that the song Born in the USA is so cliche and everything like that. I really think it's one of his greatest songs around, dude. Like The Vietnam vets in my heart goes deep. Like, my heart goes out to those guys hardcore. Like, those guys went through hell and they came back to nothing. Like, they were treated like trash. It was awful. And the inspiration was this title. And it was a movie, and he was like, "Let me have the title of the movie Born in the USA," it was called. And he's like, "I'll write a song for it, for your new movie, and you can call it that." And it was called The Light of Day.
Hmm. Yeah, I know he did a lot with the guy who wrote Born on the 4th of July, that film was about, the veteran.
Yes.
And it's such amazing, too, like how people misread that song and tried to use it.
Oh, my God.
Like, Reagan was using it as like a patriotic song. You're like, dude, this is a scathing indictment of how the country treats veterans.
It's a fucking shame, dude. Like, my heart goes out to those poor guys.
The version of this that's on the Live from New York album, when it's more like stripped down, it's on Tracks too, I think, the box set, like the original. And it's just like a guitar. And it's just like you said like songs, different meaning. It's like when you strip out all the 80s stuff and you just hear it stripped down, you're like, wow, this is a, it's like a Woody Guthrie.
I was just thinking that Woody Guthrie. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But let me hear some of that Born in the USA.
That's, yeah, I mean, the beginning like, of this is just.
It's the beginning of the album.
Yeah, and it's so, right, like we were saying, like the beginnings of each, the sides of the albums. I mean, shit, what is more, it's this huge, like just the drum beat, just how big God. This sounds. Just
the drum
it's
solo.
Over the top.
The yeah. drum solo went, oh, God, it's
yeah,
great.
Here.
Amazing. He's, I mean, it's so played out to us, you know, we just like write it off as whatever, but you know, we get to that second verse about, you know, my brother keeps and K-San.
Yeah.
It's hardcore, man.
And I mean, when you see him live, nobody's sitting down, right? And everyone, there's people like die hard, right? I've seen him over 20 times and there's people that have seen him far more than me.
Yeah.
But when he plays that and those first couple opening notes of that song, the place always goes completely bonkers.
I've never seen him play it.
I went, I said that tour when he was playing every, the albums and he was rotating a different album. And I went to the Night of Darkness. I went to the Night of Born to Run. And then the last one was Born in the USA. And I was like, I have to go see this. Like that album was just so important to me growing up. I have to see him play this front to back.
Dude, I had to work every single night of those shows, and that's why I didn't go. The bar comes first.
Yeah, I get it, man. I totally get it.
I regret that shit so much because there's always another work day.
Yeah.
But I couldn't call out of work to miss those. I hate my life.
Sometimes the work comes first, brother. I get it. Well, I had a great time.
But... go fuck yourself.
All right, dude. So we got one more album we're going to talk about, and I was really glad to see that we both agreed on this, The Rising. And I sometimes go back and forth that this might be one. Sometimes, depending on my mood, this is my favorite Springsteen album.
It's, I mean, at a time in American history, this is a perfect time for it to come out. It was like right after 9/11. What's the story that the guy was walking on the beach?
Yeah. So he had... the band had gotten back together, and I guess now, like, I don't know, man, it's hard to emphasize how big of a deal that was, that he was getting the E Street Band back together, right? Because they were like, they got back together and they did like a week residency in like Asbury Park, and they were like, they were rehearsing, and they didn't like, they never cared if people go and like hang out outside and listen to them rehearsing. And it was like, holy shit, the E Street Band's back together. I think like today's show was from Asbury Park for like a week, and then they did the reunion tour, and but they still didn't put out any music. And they, you know, I guess after 9/11, he was driving somewhere, or he was on his motorcycle. He was somewhere and some dude stopped him and was like, hey, we need you. Like, America needs you right now. And he was just kind of like, that was the, what spurred him to make this album. I think it is one of the most tasteful responses to 9/11.
Especially like the title, The Rising, after those, you know, this horrible thing that happened, make those buildings collapse. You know, let's play The Rising.
Yeah. I could play that whole song.
I know. I could play this whole album. I bought you this on vinyl, didn't I?
I don't.
One Christmas. Yeah. I bought you the record player and you told me how this is my favorite, your favorite album, and I bought this for you. I know I did. I know I did, bro.
I got the record players right next to me. It's right on my bookshelf, my office.
Better be, motherfucker.
It is.
Which I love is My City of Ruins, which is another song that's not saying like 9/11, but, you know, how can you not mistake the title of that, you know?
Yeah, so that song he initially wrote about Asbury Park, because Asbury Park went through a kind of a tough time where it was run down and nobody was moving there. And then, a lot of it's turned a corner a lot now.
Oh, yeah.
At the time, it was supposed to be about Asbury Park. And then after 9/11, he played it at that tribute show, the Heroes tribute, the fundraiser.
Yeah.
And it just totally became about that. But, these like, yeah, let's play that. And I got some notes on My City Ruins, and we can talk about some other shit. Cool. This album.
My city of ruins.
That song, it has such a church over it, right?
Oh, yeah. I
mean, he's singing about the congregation's gone and the organ is in there. And the end, he starts singing like, with these hands, I pray, Lord. It's just an incredibly powerful song. And I sent you some notes today, like when I was, or a couple of days ago, about this song that it borrows heavily from a Curtis Mayfield song called People Get Ready. Did you listen to that?
Oh, yeah, People Get Ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, People Get Ready is a fucking great song.
Yeah, it's like, it's the exact, I'll so play
many,
a little bit of it.
So many people covered it.
But it's got like, it's the exact same music as My City of Ruins. And some of the lyrics about like, you don't need no ticket, just get on board, is what Springsteen uses in Land of Hope and Dreams. But here's a little bit of People Get Ready by Curtis Mayfield. It's the same musical arrangement.
There's a train a-coming. You don't need no baggage, you just get on board. All you need is faith to hear the diesels humming. You don't need no ticket, you just think along.
Anyway, yeah, I just thought that was cool that's where the music came from. He borrowed very heavily.
One of your great version of that is... Is Rod Stewart does it with Jeff Beck.
People Get Ready?
Yeah, it's really? Fucking amazing.
I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, it used to be on this compilation at the bar, and we used to play it all the time.
Huh, I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, Jeff Beck kills it.
Part of this album, too, The Rising, it sounds so much different than a lot of the earlier stuff that we were playing, and I'm trying to say what it was. Like, it's like, it's safer... But it's bigger. Like the sound is, it's not like a wall of sound, but it's just like this album and Magic and a couple of like his later stuff all has this different sound to it. It's not as all over the place. Like you said, with the musicians having the freedom, it just sounds a little tighter.
I mean, I think they're more mature.
Sure.
And I think recording process has changed also. Everything we listen to is on tape. Now, this is probably the first time. Not the first time, but, you know, one of they did digitally, you know, did on a hard drive, you know.
Yeah. And there's a lot. I think the guitar is more prevalent here, but this is also the first time that like Nils Lofgren and Little Steven are in it. Right. So, like,
yes.
You know, Little Steven quit before Born in the USA. They replaced him with Nils. And then when they got the band back together, he was like, well, I'm not making a decision. I'm going to hire both. I'm going to both of them. And the producer too, who did this, I was like, who produced this album? Because there's definitely like a sound to a couple of these albums, and it's this dude Brendan O'Brien that I didn't know who he was, but then I started looking up like the albums he has produced, and I was like, holy shit, he did Shake Your Moneymaker and the Southern Harmony albums from the Black Crowes.
Oh,
wow. Super Unknown by Soundgarden. He did a bunch of Stone Temple Pilots albums. He did Verses, No Code, and Yield by Pearl Jam. Evil Empire by Rage, Audioslave, Trey Anastasio, AC/DC, Mastodon, Prophets of Rage. So this guy was like, this was like a really big deal. This
oh, wow.
And I think he still works with Springsteen.
Oh, I'm going to listen to this all the way through to try to place that 90s sound, you know?
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, really interesting.
And he said, I had a quote from him. He said when they an interview with the guy, he was like, well, what was it like working with Springsteen? He's like, he's like, I was sitting down with Springsteen. I said, hey, man, I got to tell you, we had a great day together and I'm really excited about doing this, but I'm worried. You have a long history of recording stuff and not putting it out. And that just scares me to death. I don't want to do that. And Springsteen was just like, I don't know what to tell you, man. That's how things go. So. Because Springsteen said he's got like a second box set that he's going to do that he said he recorded like four albums in the 90s that he just never released. He was like, ah, forget it. I don't. And he said like now he may put them all out in like another box set.
Huh. I wonder how good it would be.
Yeah. There's always rumors that like they recorded Nebraska, like electric with the full band.
I would love to hear that.
I would.
I love that record. I mean,
yeah.
You know, I love song off the rising is Lonesome Day.
Dude, Lonesome Day. Is I said this, I think, when we talked about Springsteen before, that song has helped me with so many difficult times in my life. There yeah. is just a when he is singing, it's all right. I feel like he is singing to me. And I
think he was telling everybody it's all right when yeah. it's the first song on the record, you yeah. know. And
you know, that's a good point is like after nine, like there's no anger in these songs.
Not
right, he's not like we're gonna go kill everybody and we're gonna bomb the shit out of them, like which is the way a lot of us felt, right? Like,
yeah, I mean, sure.
You yeah. know, we wanted blood for what happened. We were alive when this when 9/11 yeah. happened, but this is more like I don't know. There's reassuring. There's some comfort in it.
I think that was what it was about, was comforting. He was trying to comfort everybody.
Yeah, and I mean, even some of the songs that are on this album that I think he recorded before 9/11 that he had that necessarily aren't about 9/11.
Yeah.
They feel weird.
Oh, I don't
to
think
me sometimes.
I don't think all these songs are about 9/11. I think they're about hope, you know, which is a big thing that people needed at that time.
Yeah. And we'll get back and we'll play Lonesome. Well, let's just play Lonesome Day and I'll finish my thought.
Maybe once I thought I knew everything I needed to know about you. Sweet whisper, your tender touch. But I didn't really know that much. Joke's on me, but it's gonna be okay. If I can just get through this lonesome day. Lonesome day.
Man, I still
love
get
it.
I said I got chills when we played this on the other episode of Springsteen, and I just had the same experience. It always gives me chills.
I love the drum part that in this lonesome day. Awesome shit.
Yeah, you were saying not all the songs are about 9/11, but I think Lonesome Day is Into the Fire. Nothing Man is kind of Empty Sky.
Empty Sky is a great song, dude.
Yeah. You're missing, man. I remember that song bringing me to tears like the first time I heard it.
You know what I love? It may be a little cheesy, and I love it when he does it live, is Waiting on a Sunny Day.
I hate that song live. My wife loves it too. She really likes it.
I love when he brings the little kids up on stage and he sings it along with them. I love it. I'm a cheesy guy. I don't know.
That's normally when I get up and go to the bathroom, but
I understand it.
That's okay.
Mary's Place is a great song.
Yeah, Mary's Place kind of borrows. I was reading there's a Sam Cooke song called Meet Me at Mary's Place that he borrowed from. We play 30 seconds of that.
My heart's dark, but it's rising. I'm pulling on faith I can see. From that black hole on the horizon, I hear your voice calling me. Let it rain.
That's such a fun
It is fun, but I feel weird listening to it after all this. Like You're Missing is the next song. And you're like, man, that is so heavy, you know, about the person missing their loved one who died in 9/11. I don't know. It doesn't fit in the album for me for some reason. It just makes me feel weird when I listen to it.
I like it, though.
Yeah, it's a cool song. It's like it harkens back to some of those like East Street Shuffle, like party songs you just put on. You're having a good time.
Maybe that's what he was trying to go for.
Yeah, very well could be.
It's like, all right, in the middle of all this drag shit, let's put a happy song.
Right, got some cool tunes we're going to play. Yeah. All right, I think that's it for Springsteen, man. Let's jump into the back end of the show. All right, I got one second thought. We got an email from a guy, Tom Holler, and he sent us an email about the We Are the World show. He said, I listened to your show on We Are the World. That song stinks, but that's not why I'm writing. You were talking about Phil Collins and Sting and other people not being there. The answer was right under your nose. One of you said it. The supergroup was called USA for Africa. It was only U.S. artists. Bad song, good show. I'll keep listening. Tom.
Okay. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, dude. Thanks for not being comic book guy and blowing us up. But you're right. It was called USA for Africa. So, all right. And that was the only. Right. Right. We're smart.
I'm smart.
I could do it. I'm smart.
I was skipped over, Mikey.
All right, music news. I got a couple things. The first one, man, was Shane McGowan from the Pogues passed away of pneumonia at age 65. But I know the Pogues were a very important band to you.
Dude, I've seen them so many times. One time he didn't show up because the night before he fell off the fucking stage. He was so drunk. He broke his fucking leg.
I remember I seen him
in Philly a couple weeks later, and he was in this wheelchair and he's singing from the wheelchair.
I remember you saying like you take the limo up to New York and go see him, and
dude,
that was like a big thing for you.
He was a poet, and not for nothing, he's got one of the greatest Christmas songs ever.
Yes. So we before we did recorded this one, we cut our entry for the Song Facts podcast Christmas episode, and last year we did our bit was on the Fairy Tale from New York with Shane McGowan and Christy McCall. I agree. The Pogues were a great, you know, a punk band that used a lot of traditional Irish instruments. And Shane McGowan, you're right, he was a street poet and had all kinds of problems with drugs.
He couldn't sing to save his life.
Yeah,
I mean, he sounded like Ralph the Dog, you know, from the Muppets.
But with a lot of
let's play a little tribute to him.
Yeah, dude.
He has a song from Fall from the Grace of God. It's called If I Should Fall from the Grace of God. But play a little bit of it.
I should fall from the grace of God, where no doctor can relieve me if I'm buried beneath the sun. But the angels won't see.
Love it. Oh God, I'm gonna miss you, Shane.
Yeah, they've made a lot of good music, and yeah, he got fired from the band and for all his drinking, and then he got back together, and
Joe
Strummer was singing with them for a while.
I heard that he was such an alcoholic from inside the band. You know what he would drink? He would drink dry vermouth. That's it. Just dry vermouth. That is like the barrel. That's the bottom of the barrel, brother. Because that shit's strong. That shit will knock you on your ass.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Poor guy. He was. Yeah. He just tortured himself his whole life. And, you know.
He had some of the worst teeth in rock and roll history, too.
Yes, he did. He was the original. Though. He was the original president of the Sex Pistols fan club.
Was he really? Because I was going to say he was like the Irish Johnny Rotten in a lot of ways, just that punk attitude.
You could see him in those old footage of the Sex Pistols, like videos, like the home movies and everything. He would have this jacket on, and it was like the Union Jack. So he would run around with it, and you could see him in it in the little home movies and shit that the band
that
made.
Group, yeah, that group that used to follow them around. It was like, yeah, Susie Sue and Billy Idol and all those guys.
He was one of them.
Huh. Interesting. I think he was you the did president. Mention that. Yeah,
he was the president that. Of the fan club.
Wow. Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. Just the sure. punk rock sensibilities that he had. So they're very cool. You know, you don't need to wait until St. Patrick's Day to listen to them. The Pogues are always good to listen to.
Any time of the year, Christmas, St. Patrick's Day, Easter, absolutely. They got you covered.
Absolutely. All right. And the other song that I had, or the other story that I had, was about Kiss. So Kiss performed their final concert at Madison Square Garden in New York. And at the end of the show, to probably nobody's surprise, they announced that this really wasn't the end.
Did they really?
Yeah, you didn't see this?
I didn't pay attention to it.
Okay, so the end of the encore, they walked off the stage. They played rock and roll all night. And then these digital versions came out on screen, much like, you know, like the hologram kind of things.
Yeah.
And they the holograms did, God, I think it was God Gave Rock and Roll to You. And they said that the digital versions of them will now be continuing as the band.
Oh, Christ.
And the avatars, these digital avatars, were made with like George Lucas's special effects company. And another, you know, like ABBA was doing this, like they were having like digital versions of like,
young, oh God, they, give it.
So Kiss, so Kiss said that these guys will be performing concerts. And so like, I don't know, their manager or some shit was like, you know, imagine we could be playing like three concerts at the same time in like three different venues. So
they're like they're going to become like the Siberian Orchestra. They're going to be right out there like everywhere at one time.
Yeah, so it's like they're in the Matrix now. They're going to, like, these digital versions of them are going to continue on. And
no, thank you. Know,
they're going to use AI and everything else. Just keep making.
So what? Music. They're just going to set up a big screen, and they're going to have that shit, and then just going to have fire and all that shit.
Probably. I mean, they haven't announced any plans yet, but they just said, like, you know, the live version of the band is retiring, and the new digital version of us is going to continue on.
They should just call it quits and bring the midget band over.
Right.
Mini kiss. They're like,
yeah, but they're like, shit, man, we can digitally clone ourselves or we can sell three times as many. Yeah, they're businessmen. Well, they're all about the money.
Shame on their fans.
There's no limit to where they'll go. So.
But there's one more news thing that we didn't get into.
What is that?
It's about Daryl Hall. And
I have that too. So
Okay.
All right. So the music world was surprised when news recently broke that Daryl Hall was granted a restraining order against John Oates. But the reason was like initially sealed by the court. So some details on what the hell has been going on is slowly coming out. And I was spending way too much time trying to figure out.
I'm interested.
Now, according to TMZ, the two of them are in a joint venture together called Whole Oats Enterprises. And the joint venture owns their music catalog. And Oates was going to sell his part of the company to this company called Primary Wave IP Investment Management. One of those companies that was like buying all the music catalogs from all the musicians and shit like that. And I guess this company already owns part of their music catalog. And Daryl Hall has complained in the media for years about not getting paid fairly when they sold part of their music rights. So he got a court injunction blocking them from John Oates from selling this, and then also got a restraining order saying, like, you can't talk to me either until we can sort
I thought like John Oates beat him up with his mustache.
Right. And they said that, like, Daryl Hall, I guess, has always been like, John Oates is my business partner. He's not my creative partner. We're not creative equals. It was like rather scathing. So they're fighting over money.
He's like, I wrote Private Eyes. Damn it.
Right.
I wrote Maneater. Damn it.
And they've sold 80 million records and have 8 Grammys. So I'm sure there's a lot of money involved in the publishing rights.
They closed Live Aid, man. I mean, yeah. They were huge.
Yep. So that was the other music news. I had it in my notes. And I was like, we'll cover
it. I was looking forward to that all week because I thought there was a fist fight or some shit.
I
was hoping there was a fist fight.
Unfortunately, there wasn't.
So disappointing. We can get them in the octagon and let them go at it.
It can sort it out that way. You got a song for the electric chair this week?
Yeah, let's put something from Daryl Hall and John Oates in there.
Okay, I like it. I don't
put that. I hate rich girls. Okay. Put that damn song on.
You're a rich girl, and you're gone too far. Cause you
God,
don't anyway.
Yeah.
Girls love this song.
They all never did anything for me.
Now, all the money grubbing girls out there.
They are the Philly soul sound, but
oh yeah.
Yeah, they were always just to me. I never care. They in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Maybe.
Yeah. 2014, they were inducted by Questlove. Yeah,
another
I don't know.
Billy guy.
Yeah.
All right, give it the button.
All right.
We sentence you to death.
Dude, get the fire extinguisher. His mustache is on fire.
Yeah, they never did anything to me, and I know, or for me, and I know we've said before we're going to do something on the Philadelphia Soul Sound eventually, and I guess we'd have to talk about them, but, you know, I don't know.
That's soul.
Yeah. All right, man, so I guess that'll do it for episode 74. Go check out the full versions of the songs we played tonight. Go listen to those Springsteen albums. They are awesome. And
they will change your life.
They will. They really will. And hopefully some of you will go get to see him on the road next year. We're holding on to our tickets. Looking forward to it. I think the dates have already been announced, the two Philly shows.
Cool. So, I'm in.
Yeah. And then, be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Check us out on Facebook or Twitter. Visit our website. You drop us an email at show@prisonersofrockandroll.com. We'd love to hear from everybody. We always read comments on the air. And we'd be happy to mail you some stickers if you want some. You can keep them for yourself or give them to somebody for Christmas. And speaking of Christmas, I guess we're going to be back in our next episode with our fourth Christmas special, which is just amazing to me. As I said at the opening, it's like the fourth time doing anything. It's just crazy.
It's going to be a rocking Christmas, Bruce.
I'm looking forward to it, dude. We're going to talk about some good Christmas music, just kind of get into the Christmas spirit. I was listening to last year's Christmas episode this week, and I was driving around. I was listening to it. So good stuff.
No sarcasm this year. Just up straight Christmas party.
I love it, dude. I love it, man. I'm looking forward to it. So you have an awesome 2 weeks, and we'll be back.
Everybody out there, keep on rocking. Peace out.
I'm just a prisoner.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.